Today's scripture reading will be from Isaiah 64, 5 through 7. You come to the help of those who gladly do right, who remember your ways, but when we continue to sin against them, you are angry. How then can we be saved? All of us have become like one who is unclean, and all of our righteous acts are like filthy rags. We all shrivel up like a leaf, and like the wind, our sins sweep us away. No one calls on your name or strives to lay hold of you, for you have hidden your face from us and have given us over to our sins.
This week I got a call from a gentleman, Phil Taze. Does anybody, does anybody remember the name Taze? What about Robin or Robbie Lynx? And some folks remember that name. You might remember that Sister Lynx passed away several years ago. Her family was in North, and I had no idea about this till Phil told me. Her family actually lived in North Alabama, and I know almost her entire family. I met Phil, of all places, in Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia. He was a plant manager, or working his way up in management at the time for Reynolds, which is now, if you're familiar with the etymology of all that, Alcoa. But he was also a plant manager in North Alabama at the plant around Florence area. I'm not sure exactly where the plant was, but it was in that county, Lauderdale, I believe. But all that being said, Phil reminded me that his sister worshipped here, and he told me that he had come here and worshipped here before. And I knew that some folks here would likely remember him from years ago. Their whole family would come up to visit their sister, and they would drop in and worship here. And very faithful people. And Phil is one of those people I can count on one hand initially in my preaching life that really, really, really encouraged me to get in the pulpit. So when you hear a bad sermon, call Phil and tell him. It's your fault. You know, this is all your fault. But his family, when I went to school at International Bible College, which is now Heritage Christian University, when I went to school there, his family supported us to go. They helped support us to go. I worked my way, and Laura had a job, and all these things put together. But Phil was always such a great encouragement, and he told me something. And when I was in Richmond, he was an educational coordinator. And there's a point to all this, believe me. He was an educational coordinator, and I became the assistant educational coordinator. If there's ever a position higher than assistant youth minister, it's got to be assistant educational coordinator. I should have had a banner or a badge or something. But they wouldn't give me that much power, Will. They just wouldn't let me have it. But Phil was a wonderful man, is a wonderful man, and he's in the hospital right now in ICU in Lauderdale County. And he's struggling with COVID. He's been in the hospital, I guess it was 17 days last Tuesday. So do your math and you'll know how long he's been there. I don't know that he's in ICU, but I do know that that's where he's at. And I listened to Phil, and I've always listened to Phil. When I told him I was considering going down to look at this college, his eyes lit up. And I had no idea. I thought he was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia, but you could tell by his accent that he's definitely deep Southern, you know. But I'm talking to him, and he said, "Oh, Lonnie, that's such a wonderful place to go." He started naming off professors and all this kind of stuff, and he said, "You know, when I was a young man, I really wanted to go there," he said, "but I never could pull the trigger." And what he meant was I never could just make the decision, you know, and go do it. And he encouraged me, he lauded me, he started, and I had no idea he was, and then he said, "Well, I was born and raised in that county down there, you know, I'm from that area." And I thought, now I want to ask you this, all you statisticians out there, what is the likelihood that a young man who is considering ministry runs across a man from a place he's never been before, never lived, and is by chance working in a company that brings him to the presence of that young man? And then that same man encourages, prods, does everything he can to encourage that young man to go into ministry. What are the statistical odds of that? Now I want to ask you this. Do you think God works in your life? I told Phil, and I meant it with all my heart, and I kidded with him, and I told him, every bad sermon I preach is on you, brother. He smiled, and he said, I haven't heard them all, but I doubt there is one. He said, and he told me the same thing everybody's always told me. As long as they're from the Word, they're good. You're not going to mess up. See, that's the kind of thing that so many... It's wonderful to have encouragement, but you got to encourage about the right things. For instance, young women in this world today, it's wonderful. It makes your heart feel good when somebody says, oh, you have such a beautiful little girl. All little girls are beautiful. All little boys are handsome. That's not a bad thing. But our young ladies and our young men need to know that there's far more to being a person in this world than being pretty or being handsome. There's a substance that transcends the surface that we need to bring out. And we're in that unique position in the church. We have so many young people around here. And I do believe that you're handsome, and I do believe that you're beautiful, but I believe you're made in the image of God, and that brings a lot more to the table. That gives you a lot more power and ability than you can even begin to fathom. It took a man in my life to come along and tell me, you know, this whole thing about preaching, if you think you can't do it, you think you can't do it. I'm telling you, if you'll preach the truth, God will use you. Now, if you're afraid to do it, and you think of your own accord you can't do it, then you probably won't do it. But if you believe there's something greater than you at work, then you can get up and do something. Now, Phil interestingly called me on... I communicated with him on Monday, and then I called him and talked to him on Tuesday. Tuesday was the first day of fall. Did y'all know that? But I want y'all to know a little secret trick I did some time ago. It was back along June. Oh, I don't know. It may have been May. But my TV allows me to put a wallpaper background screen on there. And I was so tired of what was going on in the summer, I said, we're just going to fall. We're just going to go straight to fall. I'm tired of summer. It's not working out. Summer is fired. We're going to fall. And so to this day on my screen right now, you can go in there, there's a little fall thing on there. But it's interesting to me. I've always enjoyed fall. I've always loved fall. I don't know why. It wasn't, and I hate to say it, nothing against Joe and Yet, but it wasn't school. It was probably the sports associated with school, but not the educational part of it. I'm better about it now. I've come to grips with it. I realize the importance. But at the time, it's time to go back to school. Oh, it's time to go back to school. But there's something about those leaves turning, the temperature getting a little softer, that shows you a progression in life. It shows you that things are moving forward. Now, the other interesting thing, and we read about this in Isaiah 64, verses 5 to 7, you meet him who rejoices in doing righteousness. You meet him who rejoices in doing righteousness, who remembers you in your ways. Have you ever met an old friend who remembers you from a long time ago? I'm afraid to meet my teachers, because if they remember me from a long time ago, they won't recognize me today. From an attitude to a physical appearance. But they would, if he put me in a book, a mugshot, they'd never pick me out. They'd say, that's not that boy. I remember that boy, and that ain't him. They might not say ain't, but they would definitely say it's not him. Who remembers you in your ways? Behold, you were angry, you being God, for we sinned. We continued in them, those sins, for a long time. And shall we be saved? So the question from the writer, from the prophet, is this: if we sinned, you remember us from a long time. You know why we were created. You know what we're made of. And yet you look at us and we didn't pay attention to it. We didn't care about it. And now, you know, we want to be saved. But are we going to be saved? Why should we be saved? Why should we be forgiven? We've already continued on in our sin. We've kept on doing what we were doing. We told you we weren't going to do it. We made the sacrifices, and yet now we're at the fall of life. You see, I'm at a point where I'm beginning to realize I'm fixing to be, and if y'all don't know, that's a southern term. It's highly technical. It means I'm fixing to be 55 years old. In all likelihood, unless there is some medical miracle, and it's possible, but nothing we know of right now, I'm not going to live another 55 years. I'm not. I'm over half done. And there will come a day when if the Lord hasn't come back yet, I pray someone will stand in this pulpit and they will preach the truth. And I hope that in the time I have left, I hope and pray that I don't do anything to disgrace that. But do you not realize, and it's not morbid, I don't go to bed and I've got less than half my life. I think about it sometimes, but it's a real fact. There's no point in running from it. If you're afraid today to say the number of your age, you need to do some work. You need to solidify your salvation and your eternity and stop worrying about things that you have no control over. None. Keep on trucking, as we used to say in the 70s. I even had one of those t-shirts. In other words, it means don't stop, just keep moving forward. Just keep going no matter what you face, no matter what obstacle throws you down. You were angry, for we sinned. We continued in them a long time. Shall we be saved? For all of us have become like one who is unclean, and all our righteous deeds are like a filthy garment. And all of us wither like a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind take us away. There is no one who calls on your name. Who arouses himself to take hold of you? For you have hidden your face from us, have delivered us into the power of our own iniquities. Isaiah is prophesying about a time when the people of Israel are going to lose their covenant relationship and as a consequence the blessings that come with it. Now, if the Bible teaches us anything about sin, it teaches us one thing about God. It teaches us many things, but one of the things it teaches us about God is that God's patience is not infinite. It doesn't go on forever. Now, that doesn't mean He's powerless or less powerful. It just simply means that He has a length on His patience and it stops. I think sometimes we say to ourselves, well, as long as I can sin, get up in the morning and ask forgiveness and all this kind of stuff, do all that, then God will... You don't know that. First of all, you don't know that you're going to get up in the morning. You hope you will. But you don't know you will. Nobody in this room can tell me you're going to live the rest of this day. Not a single person. And that's got nothing to do with age. Sadly, even young people leave this world. And I don't want anybody to. But none of us here knows that much about our time and our life that we can dictate that. So I want to say this real quick up front, and you may as well say you got the whole sermon right now. But I'm going to tell you, if you got sin in your life, you better get it out. You need to make things right with God today. That's T-A-D-A-Y. Today. Today. Do it now. Don't put it off. Young people, don't look in the mirror and say, oh, I'm young. I've got tomorrow. You don't know that. I've done several funerals for young people. And they break my heart every single time. Some of them were faithful Christians. Some of them were not. My family, your family, it doesn't matter. Death comes. Death doesn't care who it is. It just comes. So please, young people, don't look in the mirror and think you've got more time. And those of you who have been around a little longer, those of you who we might call seniors or veterans or however you want to phrase it, just because you've been here a while doesn't mean you're going to be here a while longer. We need to understand that's one of the things about fall that I think, God put things in a natural cycle to teach us. I think nature teaches us things, just like the Bible. Now, you have to be a lot more flexible in what you extrapolate from that, but I'll tell you this about fall. Fall tells us what season's coming next. Winter, right? You're going to set your tomatoes out in the wintertime? For those of you that aren't farmers, and since I'm an expert now because I grew my first tomatoes this year, I can tell you wintertime is not the time you put your tomatoes out. Okay? Check with Denise on that, but I'm pretty sure that's true. If you put them out, they're not going to last. In other words, there's going to come a time when you're going to want fruit and you're going to want fruition and you're going to want some things done. But that work that you want to do and that work that maybe you're capable of doing now is not going to be able to be done. There will come a time when that will end. Fall is the yellow light on the signal light of our life, just before it turns red. When it turns red, you're supposed to stop. Now, I know some folks around here don't know about that. But I ride a motorcycle sometimes, and believe me, just because my light turns green doesn't mean I don't look at you. Because I couldn't, you know, the funny thing about a motorcycle is it doesn't matter what hits you, everything else is bigger than you out there. And just because the light is red doesn't mean anybody's going to stop. But that light, technically, if it's a three-color light, if it's green, yellow, and red, yellow comes on before red. You know the rule is not if it turns yellow, speed up. You know, I think some people follow that rule. But what yellow means is if you can stop now, you're going to have to stop. You should stop. Not run through the intersection and hope, well, I'm going 55 and it's yellow. And then it turns red when you're 20 feet from the red light. Do you know you can still get a ticket for, you know. Anyway, I'm just letting you know. I'm not saying anybody in this audience needs to know. Share it with people in the community, you know. Just tell people in the community. Give them that little safety bulletin. But fall is our yellow light in life. It says there's something about the cycle of life and birth and death. And fall, those beautiful colors on that tree are screaming out to us, you've got a little bit of time left. And then winter. You got a little bit of time left. And then you're done. And that's nothing to fear, but it is something to live under the auspice of and understand. So what about this fall of life? There's a lot of things in this text that we could study. Jeremiah was called the prophet of tears. Jeremiah was the prophet who not only prophesied the downfall and destruction of Israel and God's people, but he got to see it. That's why he's called the prophet of tears. And if you think it's hard to be a Christian in this world, imagine God calling on a young Jeremiah, from a relative standpoint, young Jeremiah, and he says, boy, I need you to deliver a message for me. You tell my people my patience is through. You let those folks know that the end of their covenant has come. They have broken their covenant with me, and now they have sown the wind, and what? They're going to reap the whirlwind. You took your chances, you rolled your dice, you spun the wheel, and you lost. You have worshipped idols. You have sacrificed your children. You have walked away from me and worshipped other gods. It's over. My blessings for you have ended. Now, Jeremiah, young man, he didn't want to give that message. Who wants to deliver that? Who wants to tell folks, you know what? Your gravy train, it just broke down. And it's not going to be repaired. In fact, the people that left and were taken off as slaves during that time, they never came back to Israel. They left, Israel was in the rearview mirror, and that's the last time they saw it. It was gone. Jeremiah didn't want to deliver that. He knew the terrible things that were going to happen. And then, he saw it happen. People looked at him and, oh, you young man, you don't know. You think you know. You don't know. We've been here for this long. Why? And in fact, people said, the temple is here. God lives in the temple. He won't let this temple be destroyed. That young man doesn't know what he's talking about. To this day, there's not a whole lot of blocks left on that temple. Somehow, somewhere along the way, man forgot that God doesn't live in a building. And yet, they went on, they made every excuse in the world to cover their sin and what they were doing. They were robbing their neighbors, they were stealing from the foreigners, sojourners that come through the land. They didn't have any problem with that. Well, we're just bending the rules a little bit. We're just going to flex the law. Well, you know, it could be interpreted this way if you're not. You know what? People better wake up and listen to God. These people in Jeremiah's day, they didn't want to hear from a young upstart telling them something they didn't want to hear. So they looked at him and said, your message, it's not important. Your message isn't even real. You're just a young man. But you know what? It didn't change what God told Jeremiah. Isn't it interesting that the people who hear the message don't make the message? They don't get to change it. There's no vote. We voted and we decided God need to do something different. Well, good luck. You might pray about it. He might change his mind, but you ain't voting on nothing. This is not a democracy. This is a theocracy. And it is headed by Jesus Christ. And not a majority in this room or in this church. Not a couple of people in this room or in this church. The elders don't run this church per se. They follow the rules. They are there to Jeremiah's. They, and I hope not completely, but they're the ones who are following the guidance of God in how to lead us. They don't sit down and arbitrarily come up with, today we're going to celebrate Jesus. Tomorrow we're going to celebrate somebody else. That's not their place and it's not their right. Their job is to, in fact, protect us by keeping the wolves out. They're the soldiers on the front line. They're the ones who are the individuals who know the Word. And that's why one of the reasons an elder's not supposed to be a novice or a new person, because they're supposed to know the Word well enough to protect it from the onslaught of idiocy that exists in this world, passing itself as wisdom. And it is not. And how do you know the difference? I'll give you a simple solution. If it is contrary to the will and Word of God, it is not wisdom. It is not. So, if you ever wonder, now you know. So Jeremiah preaches this lesson, and he reminds these people that there is a terminal point. In James 4, verses 13 and 14, James writes this. He says, come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Doesn't sound like a bad thing to say, does it? I'm going to go over here to Indianapolis and I'm going to set up a business. We're going to make some money. That sounds like a perfectly innocent thing to say, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound like? Well, we're just setting goals. You know, we've got to set goals. But listen to the language. In other words, we will. It is an anticipation of a future that you cannot be sure of. That's the problem with it. There's nothing wrong with setting a goal. The problem is when I am so determined, I forget that my life may not make it that far. When I bypass and forget about the fact that seasons do change, time does go by. That is the difficulty in what James is sharing. It's not that people would go and do something, and there's nothing wrong with setting up a business and making profit. There's nothing sinful in there. But the problem is when I forget God and I forget the finality of my life, I lose focus on what's supposed to be important. I've got to be willing to live my life and make those goals with the realization that I am always subject to God's calendar. I'm subject to what He has laid out for me. So when we forget that, of course, we wind up making all kinds of mistakes. Psalm 103, verses 15 and 16 says, as for man, his days are like grass, as a flower of the field. So he flourishes. When the wind has passed over it, it is no more, and its place acknowledges it no longer. Do you think that fall is an indicator of something? I hope and pray that my friend Phil will make it through this process. He's in good medical hands. He's a strong man. And I do hope and pray that he'll make it through this. My life would be diminished without Phil. That's the way good friends are, aren't they? Isn't that the way the people that we love, isn't that the way they are? And I know that if for some reason he doesn't make it through, I know that he is sure, and I believe from what I've observed in his life, I'm pretty sure he's going to be in a good place. A better place, to be honest with you. But selfishly, I want him to stay. But this verse that we just read, this Psalm 103, verses 15 and 16, some people say that's designed to teach us that life isn't valuable. No. It's exactly the opposite. It is to teach us that life is valuable. You see, if I can know without any question that I can endure what life throws at me and I can take it and I can get knocked down and it's never going to hurt me, at what risk would you take? In World War II, they discovered that the younger the recruit was, the better pilot they would make. Airplane pilot. Now, you got to understand, in World War II, man hadn't been flying all that long. Okay? And even with the engineers that were there and all the people that were smart, what they found out was the one thing they had to teach young pilots to do was not to fly the wings off the aircraft. In other words, they could take such a steep dive and put that aircraft in such a position that if they pulled up too hard, the wings would rip right off the airplane. But what they also learned was that these younger pilots were nearly fearless. They'd go into anything. They'd fly into the mouth and maw of Satan himself if they could get that airplane pointed in that direction. I mean, that's the kind of people they were. And we have some outstanding, wonderful stories. I've always been fascinated by people who fly, among other people in life, but and the things they did, and there's some fantastic stories. But here, the one thing they had to do was teach these young people, you're not indestructible, and neither is my airplane. And what's interested me is many mechanics will tell you, I don't care if you get hurt, but you better not hurt my machine. And that's, you know, I don't know if they're being truthful or not. I hope they're not, but I think some of them were. But the truth is that if we thought we could get through life and do anything to anybody and to ourselves and never suffer any damage, what would you do? What would you not do? Would there be a reason to restrict ourselves or to say to ourselves, I need to really consider what I'm doing with my life? One thing I can promise you is that we are frail, though many times we can be strong of heart. We do break. I've watched people break physically, and even more powerfully, I've watched them break emotionally or spiritually. People do break. And I just want to say that God knows who He designed. He knows what we are. He knows our frailty. He knows our susceptibility to the things in our environment and to the things that are around us. And He tells us, put your faith in Me, not in yourself. And if we were that indestructible, how many would even think they'd need to trust God? Well, I'm going to be all right anyway. What difference does it make? I'm going to make it. That's what people tell themselves. I'm going to be fine. John 9:4. We must work the works of Him who sent Me as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. The finality. That time will come. I hope it doesn't come soon. But folks, it's coming for all of us. Nobody in this room is going to be exempt from it. You might be here when the Lord returns, but you're still going to stop your work. When the Lord comes back, don't think, well, I'm just going to keep on working down here. No, I hate to tell you, Peter's already told us, everything's going to be devoured up in flame. Everything's going to go away. So in saying that, where are you at in your life? Are you working with the understanding that the time will come? And you might be in the spring of your life. You might be in the summer. You might be in the fall. I don't know. But the question is, what are you doing right now while you have the opportunity to live for God? What are you doing? Well, you know, I think good thoughts. Well, that's wonderful. Do you think good thoughts when you sit down at the dinner table? Well, you know, I'm hungry. I've been working hard all day, and you wolf that food down. Are you just going to sit there and look at it? You know what? I'm so hungry, I'm just going to think good thoughts right now. Yeah, I'm going to think while I'm moving. You know? That's what people do, isn't it? When it comes to doing something for God, everything is an option. You know, I can, and everything, you know, there are folks that today in this country and in this world couldn't get out of bed this morning because they were tired. I don't know about y'all, but I wake up tired. I do. Laura, my wife's a morning person. I love her to death. She's singing and hopping and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I'm like at least a gallon of coffee before we get started, you know. Just something. And she always asks me, how you doing? My answer is always the same. I'm tired. You know? And that's the difference in people. But what is it about life? I mean, do we not realize that we need to be people who are in movement? And I can say, boy, I'm not going to go today. I'm just going to think some good thoughts. Okay. Well, what is that going to actually get done? That's a mental health day. And mental health days, and I'm not against them, but they can turn into mental health periods of time and mental health weeks and mental health months and mental health years. You know, I've been wanting to work for the church. I've been wanting to do something for the Lord. But, you know, and here comes the excuse. Think about that next time your car needs gas. Well, I'm on E. That little stick is on E. But, you know, I'm just going to think some good thoughts. Yeah, well, you're going to be thinking I'm not moving here in a little bit. You can think all those good thoughts you want to think. But if you're not out moving and living your life for God, don't make the excuse in the fall just before winter shows up. I'm going to get it all done right now. No, you're not. You might get some things done, but you're not going to get it all done. So we need to keep that in mind. Autumn leaves also suggest that we need to get ready for winter. Now, it may be that you lived your life to the degree that you can't do what you did before. And for you young people, you don't understand this because it never seems like that when you're young, does it? Some people, if you're like Will, you can get up and run 5 miles a day or, you know, I don't know. Miss Lil will tell you how far it goes, but, you know, do that. Some people might have those kind of genetics, but me and Will are related through the blood of Christ, not through the genetics, you know. So I hope I'm doing what he does when I get there. But the truth is, though, that, again, we need to always remember that time is coming and that point of life comes when I need to be prepared for the time when I'm going to be here. What more can I do? If I heard a preacher say one time in a gospel meeting that he thought all preachers over the age of 45 years old either ought to be teaching in school or be elders. I don't agree with that, obviously, because that was 10 years ago for me. I'm neither teaching in school or retired, but it's what he said. Now, at the time, I will tell you, he was 40 years old. I will also tell you, now, today, he preached for over 55 years. So, you know, and he's still around. He's still preaching at Little Congregation. He's not full-time, but he's still preaching. So apparently his advice at 40 was not the same advice he followed a little bit later. But the truth is, what are you going to do when you can't do the things you've always done? When my back is sore, or my knees don't hold up like they used to, or my hips, or, you know, my eyes aren't as strong, or maybe I can't hear as well, or whatever your debilitating physicality will bring to you. What are you going to do? My advice would be this. Do whatever you can. God's not going to judge you for what you don't have. He knows what you got. He knows your ability. He also knows your disability, if you want to look at it that way. And we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. And all I'm going to say to you is this. Don't use that as an excuse like some people do to do nothing. Find out what your abilities are. You got to find them out. I know, but I can't do what I once did. Okay, we'll do something else. Do something else. Everything in the Bible that indicates a faithful person talks about action. Don't say you love me if you don't do what I tell you to do. That's right out of the mouth of Jesus. In other words, my action will indicate what's in here. I'm not saying we shouldn't tell the Lord we love Him. But He can look at my heart and tell me whether I love Him or not. He can look at my life and my actions and the things I've done. He can say, son or daughter, you don't love me. I hope He doesn't say that to us. But He could. We got one more. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Therefore, knowing the fear of the Lord, we persuade men, but we are made manifest to God. I hope that we are made manifest also in your consciences. What does it mean for something to be made manifest? It means to take a principle or idea or purpose and put it into a structure that can be witnessed. That means it's manifest. When you look at the cloud by day, pillar of fire by night, with the children of Israel walking through the desert, God was manifest in those symbols. In the New Testament, when you see the miraculous things that occurred by those Christians that had the hands of the apostles laid on them, those miracles were a manifestation of the power of God. Jesus Christ was a manifestation of God on earth. What did He say? You want to see the Father? If you've seen Me, you've seen Him. Now that's pretty serious. You want to see what God looks like? You're looking at Him. That's a pretty bold statement, but it's the truth from Jesus. So when we think about manifestations of God, I want to ask you this. Is He manifest in your life? In other words, if someone were to look at you, where would they see God? How would they see Him? Going back to our concept of autumn, it is autumn in the world. I mean, for us, you know, I guess it is for everybody. Are the seasons reversed below the equator? I don't know. I live here. I don't live there. I couldn't tell you. Maybe it's winter. I don't know if it's Christmas down there. I don't know. But I can tell you this, that right now, as those leaves change color, and they are beautiful in my humble opinion, except for when they fall off the tree and I got to rake them up. At that point, I'm done with them. But that being the case, it ought to remind us that life is made to us on a cycle. And there will come a time when all the sorries and all the boy I wish I had's or tomorrow I'm going to get this done is not going to be enough. In fact, it's going to mean nothing. We need to work while we're still able to work. This morning I want to encourage you, if you've not done what you need to do to become a Christian, I hope by this point in my sermon you understand when I call out to you in this invitation, now's the time. Don't wait until such a point in time as you look back and say, I wish I had. I think that's one of the worst things. That's one of the worst feelings. I have young men sometimes that want to go into ministry. They'll say, Brother Lonnie, what should be the first thing I do before I go into ministry? And my little piece of advice is a little different than a lot of folks. The first thing you need to do is anything else you think you want to do. I'm talking about legally, ethically, whatever. But, well, I'd like to go out and be a pilot. We talk, was anything wrong being a pilot? No. Phil was a pilot. Still is, I guess. You could probably still fly one of those big boys if you had to. I know if I'm on a plane, I want Phil sitting beside me. Or in the cockpit. But you can be whatever you want to be, but because I can tell you this, the day in ministry that gets hard, you're going to think to yourself, boy, I wish I had done whatever. And you're going to be longing to go, but Satan is good at that. I've watched a lot of men, 75% of all preachers that start out in ministry within 5 years will quit. Go do something else. I always knew, I had one guy tell me one time, he was leaving school, we were in school together, he said, I'm leaving. I said, where are you going? He said, well, I'm going to Auburn University. Great school, nothing wrong with it. But he said, I'm going to Auburn University. They have a great forestry program. I want to be a forest ranger. And I asked him, I said, what made you decide to be a forest ranger? He said, a sermon I preached 2 weeks ago. I don't know what was in the sermon. He wouldn't tell me, and I don't know what the reaction was of the people that heard it. But apparently he decided he needed to be a forest ranger. Sometimes you can preach the truth, and even good people won't accept it. You just got to live with that. That's a hard thing. But this morning, if you're not a Christian, I want to invite you to make that decision today and come forward. And if you are a Christian and maybe you're struggling with something in your life, if there's anything we can do for you in the body of Christ here, please come while we stand and while we sing.